All rise.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. The second case to be heard this morning is a mandamus and set for 10 o'clock in Ray Columbia Medical Center of Louisville subsidiary, etc. So I'll ask the clerk to please call the case. All right, thank you. All right, Ms. Joyce, you are up.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honors, this mandamus proceeding involves a challenge to the August 8, 2008 order entered by the Honorable Lee Gabriel, presiding judge of the 367th Judicial District Court of Denton County. The order at issue in this case denied the Medical Center of Louisville's motion to quash the plaintiff, Center Place Properties, jury request, despite a clear contractual jury waiver executed by the parties to a commercial real estate lease, which lease forms the basis of the plaintiff's claims in the underlying lawsuit. The effect of the order, Your Honors, was to invalidate an otherwise valid contractual provision. The respondent committed a clear abuse of discretion in failing to enforce the jury waiver contained in Section 24 of the lease for two reasons. First, respondent's order ignores the holdings of the Texas Supreme Court in In Re Prudential and in In Re General Electric, under both of which the jury waiver should be enforced. The waiver at issue here is clear, it is conspicuous, and it could not have misled Center Place into thinking that it meant anything other than what it clearly said. Second, Your Honors, under this court's Mikey's Houses decision, the jury waiver should likewise be enforced. While the record before the trial court and before this court demonstrates that the medical center has advanced ample evidence in support of the fact that this particular jury waiver was, in fact, knowingly and voluntarily given.
What evidence was that?
Well, Your Honor, there was a considerable amount of evidence. First, starting with the lease that issued between the parties. The lease contained at least six handwritten revisions that were made by Center Place Properties for the benefit of Center Place Properties in negotiating the lease. Also, the jury waiver provision that you see here is clear. It clearly states waiver of jury trial. It clearly states that the parties contemplate that they are waiving their rights under the Texas Constitution, and it also states that the waiver is, in fact, knowingly and voluntarily.
Was there any evidence besides the lease?
Yes, Your Honor, there was a significant amount of evidence. Starting first, as I said, with the negotiations to the lease and moving forward through the progress.
Did anybody testify?
No, Your Honor, there was no oral testimony, but there was approximately 300 pages of documents submitted by the medical center. And in those documents were evidence that the parties to this particular lease also entered into a First Amendment to the lease, which ratified and confirmed the terms of the original lease, including the jury trial. And the undisputed evidence before the court, because as I stated, Center Place Properties advanced no evidence to the contrary. The undisputed evidence shows that Center Place was, in fact, represented by counsel at the time that it executed the First Amendment that incorporated this provision. And, in fact, that it was Center Place's counsel, as you'll see in the record at page 132 and 133, that proposed the language that incorporated the lease, including the jury waiver, by reference. Your Honors, under the Prudential and General Electric standards, this jury waiver should be enforced. In Prudential, a nearly identical jury waiver provision to the one at issue before this court was upheld. And I have a copy of the jury waiver provision in Prudential. As you can see, the jury waiver provision in Prudential was confusing. The caption was mislabeled. ICP and the Cichis, who were the parties against whom waiver was sought in that case, those parties argued that the waiver was, in essence, hidden because it was in a 67-page document. It was located in a place that you couldn't easily tell where it was. They argued that Prudential did not point out this jury waiver provision to them when they executed it, and in fact, the Cichis themselves testified that they never noticed it and never intended to waive jury trial. Also, they argued they were foreign immigrants, they had no more than an eighth grade education, and that the bargaining power was unequal. In Prudential also, although the Cicis were represented by counsel at the time they signed this lease at issue there, counsel never brought it to their attention, and the testimony was that there was no review of this provision. Now, despite all of those facts, Your Honors, the Texas Supreme Court held that this waiver is enforceable, and they did so because they held that it was, quote, crystal clear, that it could not have misled the Cicis into believing it meant anything other than what it said. They also held that since it was, quote, not printed in small type or lengthy text, and that the paragraph was captioned in bold type, that the waiver, importantly, Your Honors, was conspicuous. In Prudential, the Texas Supreme Court balanced the constitutional right to trial by jury with the fundamental principle of Texas contract law, which is that the parties are presumed to have knowledge of the provisions of the contract that they signed. And the court specifically noted that absent some claim by the party against whom waiver is sought, absent some claim that they were tricked into agreeing to it or there was some other type of foul play, that a clear jury waiver such as this one will be upheld. 2 years later, in its General Electric holding, the Texas Supreme Court again announced its support for pre-suit contractual jury waivers, holding that a conspicuous waiver is prima facie proof of a knowing and voluntary waiver. Now, more importantly to this case, in its General Electric decision, the Texas Supreme Court cited to the Houston Court of Appeals decision with approval in In re Wells Fargo. And in In re Wells Fargo, the court there held that if your jury waiver says, the language of the jury waiver says that it is knowingly and voluntarily given, that too is going to be conclusive evidence. And I quote, conclusive evidence that the waiver was in fact knowing and voluntary. And at that point, Your Honors, it became incumbent upon CenterPlace, since our waiver does state that
but
it's knowing.
Counsel, seriously, you can't seriously contend that all you have to do is put that it's knowing and voluntary and then none of the factors subsequently expressed even come into play.
No, Your Honor, and I don't think that the Texas Supreme Court contemplates that extreme of a view. I think that the Texas Supreme Court in Prudential and General Electric state that if this waiver is clear and if it contains certain terms and it's obvious that there is no attempt to trick or to hide, and in fact in Prudential the court said that, that if it's not smaller than the surrounding text, and if it is in fact...
But that's not the test. The test is that there has to be evidence that it was knowingly and voluntarily made. And the Supreme Court adopted the Brady standard for determining a knowing and voluntary waiver. So what I would really like to hear from you is what evidence in the record before us is there that this waiver was made knowingly and voluntarily by CenterPlace?
Certainly, Your Honor.
And, I'm looking at the record here on page 132 and 133 and 134, and I don't see anything about the contractual jury waiver.
Your Honor, the record at page 132 and 133 is the evidence that CenterPlace's counsel, in fact, drafted the First Amendment. If you'll turn to the subsequent pages, I believe that it's two pages later on the last page of the First Amendment, and I do have a blow-up of that section, Your Honor. The language that was inserted by CenterPlace at the time that they reaffirmed and reincorporated the provisions of the lease stated that we understand the lease is in full force and effect. And the relevance of this, Your Honor, is that the evidence in the record is clear that at this time, CenterPlace was, in fact, represented by counsel. They had an opportunity to review the provisions of the lease, and they had an opportunity to change the jury waiver as it was in the original lease. But despite 4 months of negotiations, despite extensive opportunities to do so, and despite modifications to other provisions of the lease, CenterPlace Properties incorporated the lease, including the jury waiver, and in fact ratified and confirmed it by the language of CenterPlace's own counsel. Under this court's framework in Mikey's Houses, the waiver was certainly knowing and voluntary. And if we look at the factors that this court laid out in Mikey's factors, those factors, in fact, weigh in favor of enforcing the jury waiver at issue here. First and foremost, the waiver itself is conspicuous. If the waiver in In re Prudential was conspicuous, the Texas Supreme Court so held, So is this one. The only difference between the In re Prudential waiver and this one is that ours is underlined instead of bolded, and our caption is not confusing and clearly states what it means. In Mikey's houses, the waiver at issue there was presented in an addendum to the contract that was presented after the contract had already been signed. In addition to that, the Mikey's houses jury waiver was not set apart from other paragraphs in the addendum. And in fact, appeared in the exact same fashion as the other 22 paragraphs that were contained in that addendum.
And how does this one differ?
Well, Your Honor, this one differs because it is underlined in the pre-printed form, first of all, and second of all, it is not identical to every other paragraph that's contained in the lease. There are of the paragraphs that are in the lease, 22 out of the 66 contain absolutely no distinguishing features whatsoever. Now, CenterPlace argues to this court that, in fact, this section 24 is identical to every other paragraph in the lease, as did this court find in Mikey's houses. And I actually have a blow-up here. I'm not sure if you'll be able to see it or not, but this is just one of the pages from the lease. This is found on the record at page 31. This is page 9 of the lease. These paragraphs are not identical. And in fact, the underline in the pre-printed form is meant to call attention to specific areas of the lease, and that is what has happened here.
But it looks like every section is underlined, just the A, B, C under the sections aren't underlined.
That's correct, Your Honor, but in Mikey's houses, what was at issue was the fact that there was a 22-paragraph addendum to lease, and that every single one of those paragraphs was, in fact, exactly the same, was, in fact, a captioned paragraph. So there was absolutely no distinction, no variance, as you flip from page 1 to page 2 at all, and that's not the case here. Exactly as the Texas Supreme Court found in Prudential, this waiver is crystal clear, it's not printed in small type, it's not hidden, and it's not meant to mislead. And if the Texas Supreme Court held that the Prudential waiver was conspicuous, so is this one. Next, Your Honors, the undisputed evidence that's before this court is that CenterPlace, in fact, has significant experience with the particular type of contract that is at issue before the court today, and that the relative bargaining power of the parties weighs in favor of the medical center. In Mikey's houses, the evidence indicated that Martin and Powell, the parties against whom waiver was sought, didn't really understand the transaction that was before them. In fact, they put in testimony that said, we didn't really understand what this addendum was, and our experience that it meant the opposite of what we thought it did. We thought it was just going to be some as-is language. Well, here, first of all, CenterPlace Properties had an opportunity to present evidence that they didn't understand what they were being presented with, and they decided not to. Absolutely no evidence was introduced before the trial court.
What evidence is there that they have that they're experienced in these kinds of negotiations in the past?
Your Honor, page 37 of the record, the lease itself states that CenterPlace Properties has entered into at least 11 commercial real estate leases prior to entering into the lease at issue here. CenterPlace is certainly a sophisticated landlord. In fact, in the lease, CenterPlace grants a right of first refusal to the medical center to purchase the two buildings that are at issue here for $22.6 million. They contracted to receive rent from the medical center in excess of $3 million. Now, CenterPlace has argued that the experience factor that's at issue before the court is whether or not CenterPlace had experience negotiating this particular lease, meaning this particular document that's before the court. Did they use this form before? But that's not the standard that was articulated by this court. The experience factor deals with whether or not the party had knowledge of the type of transaction, and the undisputed evidence shows that they certainly did. Finally, and the most important factor before the court today, is that CenterPlace was, in fact, represented by counsel, and that the lease and the First Amendment were both negotiated documents. In Mikey's houses, this court found that the waiving parties were not represented by counsel at all, and that no aspect of the contract at issue was negotiated. Clearly here, there are handwritten revisions that were made to the lease, and importantly, Your Honors, those revisions were made for the benefit of the landlord of CenterPlace, and they were not made for the benefit of the tenant. And it is undisputed, Your Honors, that counsel was retained in connection with the First Amendment, which you see here, that First Amendment was heavily negotiated over a period of 4 months. You see that at the record between pages 131 and 261, and that during that time, numerous changes were made to the lease, and no attempt whatsoever was made to modify the jury waiver, and Center Place's own counsel ratified and confirmed it and incorporated it by reference into their lease. Your Honors,
I'm sorry. Can you tell me again? You said page 37 of the lease itself. Is that? It looks like the lease doesn't go to page 37.
Your Honor, I'm sorry. The record at page 37.
Okay.
It's the
okay.
lease page 15 that identifies the previous leases that had been entered. And that fact, Your Honor, is undisputed in the briefing before the court, and in fact in the testimony that was given before the trial court. Center Place admitted that it had in fact entered into previous leases in this case. Your Honors. Again, I harp on the fact that this record is undisputed. Center Place introduced absolutely no evidence before the trial court to refute the evidence that the medical center put in the record that this was, in fact, a knowing and voluntary waiver. Under Prudential, under General Electric, and under this court standards as they were set forth in Mikey's Houses, this is a knowing and voluntary waiver that should be enforced. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. We appreciate that. Mr. Dankus-Ryder.
May it please the court. Usually, the terms in a contract would be upheld by a court and be enforceable. But in this case, what we're dealing with is a fundamental right, a right that arises out of the U.S. Constitution and arises out of the Texas Constitution. And so the courts have held that whenever you have a fundamental right, such as this one, the starting place is a presumption against the waiver of that constitutional right. That's the starting place. The waiver the court would have to find that the waiver was made knowingly and intentionally, and in fact, the court would have to find that Columbia put on enough evidence to overcome that presumption that was knowingly and intentionally waived.
But don't the documents show that? The documents show a 4-month period of negotiation and a ratification by counsel with counsel of a prior lease containing a contractual jury trial waiver?
Your Honor, what you'll see is that there's no evidence in the record that the lease itself was negotiated, or in the record that Center Place was represented when the lease itself that contains that term was entered into.
But couldn't it be subsequently ratified? Have to take that into account in our analysis?
I think that you can take it into account, Your Honor, but here's the problem under the factors that the court has laid out. Whenever you have one of the factors is, of course, that you have an attorney. And the reason, as this court has stated, as one of those seven factors, one of the reasons that you want to have an attorney is one of the factors is so that the attorney had the opportunity to examine the agreement. Okay? The attorney didn't have the opportunity to examine the agreement before that term was entered.
But if he changed provisions subsequently.
And I think that, Your Honor, goes to this. The other factor that the court has laid out is the relative bargaining power. What bargaining power does a person have after the lease is entered, after that term is entered, to come back and say we want to change it? Really none. It's already in force and effect. The whole lease was in force and effect the entire time.
Some of the provisions were amended, right?
Some of the provisions were amended.
So there was some bargaining power.
There was some bargaining power on terms that the hospital wanted change, that Columbia wanted change, and that they were willing that Center Place was willing to have changed. But they had no bargaining power outside. First of all, the record is void of any negotiation on that waiver provision. They've put in some email exchanges, but nothing in those email exchanges that say we're not going to negotiate the jury waiver or we are negotiating the jury waiver and somebody said no. But because the presumption has to favor Center Place, the fact that there's no evidence doesn't mean that there wasn't, doesn't help Columbia. So the court can't just presume then that was something that was taken up or that was something that was negotiated. Under those factors, there is no evidence that term was ever negotiated or that term was ever something that could have been waived. For example...
But I think the negotiation is as to the whole contract, not as to one provision. I think that the negotiation factor goes to the entire contract, not to the particular jury waiver provision. In other words, if the entire contract is negotiated, then I think that that is some evidence weighing in favor of a valid waiver.
What the court stated in Mikey's house is there's two factors regarding that. One is the entire lease being negotiated or the entire document being negotiated, and then also another factor is that particular provision be negotiated. We certainly have no evidence that particular provision was negotiated. And we don't have any provision that the entire lease was negotiated. We have, if you look at the exchange in those emails, we only have provisions regarding three or four of those provisions being negotiated, and that's all. Not all those other factors, not all those other terms, not all the other sections. So under both of those factors, we don't have any evidence that either the waiver provision was looked at or that the waiver provision was something that was open to negotiation. If you're going into a new lease and you have that provision going in and you're negotiating whether it goes in or out, certainly both sides, all things being equal, would have same bargaining power. But once it's entered and now you're talking about an amendment, you certainly don't have the same negotiating power as you would going into a new lease.
I'd like to ask you a question, too, about the standard of review, because in Mikey's, the case was presented to us on an appeal from an interlocutory order, and we basically reviewed it under a de novo law standard. And this case is presented as a petition for writ of mandamus, which is a different standard in abuse of discretion. And so I'm wondering if that makes any difference in our analysis.
Well, I think it does make some difference in your analysis, Your Honor, because there really are three cases that counsel's already cited for you, this Prudential case, this General Electric case, and the Mikey's case. And with the court, with this trial court, looked at those cases, looked at only the evidence that was presented, and decided, based upon those cases, knowing those cases, what it should do there. It did apply the law. And so under an abuse of discretion standard, the court's going to have to find that somehow the court ignored the existing law in order to make its ruling here, and I don't think that's happened here. I mean, the evidence is that this was all before the court, and the court made its decision knowing what the law was and applied the law to these facts. Of course, our position is that because you can look at this stack of documents and then, they want you to make certain presumptions. If you look at the places where the initials were made or strikeouts were made in the lease, and they want you to presume that somehow Center Place Properties negotiated those terms. They want you to make that leap, that presumption. But the court can't make that presumption because it's a fundamental right. The court should make the presumption that possibly the facts are that those were terms that were dictated by Columbia after the lease had already been signed by Center Place, and Center Place had to initial those changes. That could just as likely be true. And because the presumption is in favor of Center Place, since that is just as likely true, that doesn't show that there was a negotiation regarding those lease terms. Because there was no testimony at the trial court level, all those documents do is really, they don't really aid in the court's analysis because we don't know under what circumstances certain things were done. We don't know if that stack of emails was all the emails that was exchanged between the parties. We don't know if those lease terms were changed after negotiation or if they were just changed based upon something that was dictated to Center Place by Columbia. We just don't know. And when the court doesn't know, or I think the term that counsel used before was that it was unclear, when something's unclear, it has to be favored to Center Place that there was no waiver. If I want to talk a little bit about whether or not this provision is conspicuous. In the Prudential case, which they're trying to use to say it was conspicuous, the court there doesn't really describe what the lease terms around that provision looked like. We don't know what it looked like in context of the entire lease. So we don't know. But we do know that in Mikey's case, when you had a lease that supposedly, if there was a bolding of the first introductory phrases, it was bolded throughout the whole lease. All the introductory phrases were bolded. And I think this court used the term unique. That is the jury waiver set out somehow as being unique. Well, it wasn't in Mikey's and it wasn't here. So was it conspicuous? It's not conspicuous in this lease because it's not set out different than any other provision. I would point out to the court that there is no Texas court that has ever held that a jury waiver should be upheld when it's not conspicuous, as it's not conspicuous here, and where the party's not represented by counsel when that jury waiver is entered into. There's no case that does that. Those two factors are missing here, and without one of them, the person waiving their right to a jury doesn't know. And I think it, because it's such a fundamental right, that those two factors are really huge, because either it's in bold, it looks different than the printing, all the printing around it, so that somebody might say to themselves, this is important. Otherwise, if it looks like every other provision, you don't get that sense. Or an attorney is involved and knows that this is a fundamental right, something's important here, and I can advise my client. Without one of those two, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have a knowing and intentional waiver. And we don't have any evidence that either one of those two factors. The other factor that the council has talked about is the experience in negotiating these types of leases, and they cite the provision in the lease that references some other leases that Center Place had entered into. Again, we don't have any evidence in this record that those weren't simply form leases. The factor that this court set out in Mikey's House was that they had experience in negotiating the particular type of lease. So we don't know from the record, because we have no testimony, we simply have the lease, we don't know if any of those leases were negotiated. We don't know if those were simply form leases. We don't know what the parties did in entering into those leases, whether there was attorneys involved, whether how they were done. They may be simply a real estate form lease that the parties entered into. We don't know. And since we don't know, again, that doesn't help the appellant here. It should, because the burden is on them. If we don't know, it should help. It should be in favor of non-waiver. They have no evidence that the party was represented by counsel when the lease was entered into. They have no evidence that the parties had the opportunity to examine the lease with counsel prior to entering into the waiver provision. And then they have no evidence that the parties negotiated that waiver provision, that particular term. Even whenever you get to the amendment part, their own record and their own argument in their brief is that there's nothing in any of those emails that say that term was negotiated. It's simply, the record is simply void of any evidence that term itself was negotiated. Then also that provision, again, is the same. It's not unique in the contract. If you look through the contract, you can easily flip over that term. It's not a particular provision that was negotiated or initialed by Ganesh Harpervat whenever he entered into the lease, when he signed the lease on behalf of Center Place Properties. And then you have this issue of relative bargaining power, which I already touched on. If you don't have an attorney involved in your negotiation of the lease, you don't have the relative bargaining power. If you have a lease the provision is already entered into by the time you get the attorney, you don't have as much bargaining power to have that lease provision changed. It's already there. It's already been signed off on. It's already in effect. It's hard to argue that I want to take it out now, unless you're giving something in exchange, which all, if you look at those email exchanges, nothing that was being exchanged in those emails has anything to do with the attorney waiver. It has to do with when Columbia will move into the lease space and what Columbia will have to build in order to meet a deadline to move in. That has nothing to do with the waiver.
Concerning the relative bargaining positions of the parties, don't you think it's relevant that Center Place is a landlord?
Your Honor, I really don't. I think that because this record is void of any evidence as to what powers they had here, it might also be relevant that Columbia is a multi-state billion-dollar company. and it was dealing with Center Place. It was a tiny family-owned business. That has, you know, that may be as just as big a factor as it being a landlord, but we don't know. All we know is that this lease was a form or a form that Columbia presented to the landlord, and so we don't know what their bargaining power was, other than
how do we know that Columbia presented it to Center Place?
I believe if you look in those emails, I don't know the exact site, but I believe if you look in those emails that you can glean from that is a Columbia's lease form, and that's why I say that. But I'm not sure that I can't cite for you a particular point in the record, but I think that you can get that from those emails. But again, if there's no evidence in the record as to who had the bargaining power, the presumption has to go in favor of non-waiver. It has to go in favor of that Columbia had the bargaining power, or that Center Place didn't have the bargaining power, because this record is just simply void of any evidence to the contrary. Again, this is a fundamental right, and when there's no evidence, the presumption should favor Center Place Properties and a non-waiver of this right to a jury. We ask that the court affirm the trial court's ruling and grant Center Place its costs.
Thank you, Mr. Dankus-Ryder. Ms. Joyce, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. Your Honors, the record before the court is void of any evidence to the contrary that this jury waiver was not knowingly and voluntarily given because Center Place chose not to present any evidence to the trial court that was the case. For example, Your Honors, Center Place offers several reasons that it believes that this court should find the jury waiver wasn't knowingly and voluntarily given. Among them, that Center Place was not experienced in negotiating this particular lease, that it didn't negotiate the terms, that the relative bargaining power is not equal, and incredibly, that there is somehow evidence in the record of the wealth of Columbia and the lack thereof of Center Place Properties. There is absolutely no evidence in the record to dispute the evidence that the medical center has advanced to show that this was a knowing and voluntary waiver. And as the Wells Fargo court found, that if the party who's trying to defeat the waiver at issue doesn't do that at the trial court, they're not allowed to then do it at the Court of Appeals. With respect, Your Honors, to the negotiation issue, Justice Walker points out a key fact. Center Place Properties is, in fact, the landlord in this case. These changes that were made to the lease, the handwritten revisions that you see, appear at the record between pages 37 and 39. If you look at the changes, Your Honors, they are made for the benefit of the landlord. They changed the terms to be more flexible for the landlord. They shortened the right of first refusal from an unlimited period of time over the lease to 5 years. And also the initials that appear on the lease, they appear both before and after the jury waiver provision in the lease. And the modifications that Center Place made to the lease itself were made after, subsequent to the appearance of the jury waiver in the text of the lease itself. If Center Place Properties wanted to make changes to that jury waiver provision, they certainly could have. Your Honors, this is also a conspicuous provision. It's conspicuous under Prudential, but even if it's not, the Texas Supreme Court doesn't require that it has to be. Here, this was a clear provision that states that it was knowingly and voluntarily given, and combined with the rest of the evidence that the medical center has put before both the trial court and before this court, the waiver was knowingly and voluntarily given. Now, Justice Walker, you also raised the issue of the standard of review here, and it is clear to this court that the trial court did in fact abuse her discretion. Given the undisputed facts in the record, both before the trial court and this court, and the holdings of General Electric, of Prudential, and this court in Mikey's Houses, the jury waiver at issue should have been enforced, and to not do so was an abuse of discretion given the established case law in the area. Finally, Your Honors, with respect to the issue of representation by counsel, we've already pointed out to the court that there is significant evidence in the record that Center Place Properties was represented by counsel, that this First Amendment was heavily negotiated, and Center Place argues that this provision of the jury waiver wasn't addressed by counsel. Again, I'll bring back to the court that it was their burden to show that that was the case, and that the clear evidence before this court shows that the landlord and tenant desire to amend the lease and that they agree that the lease, not a specific provision of the lease itself in its entirety remains in full force and effect. If Center Place wants to argue that its counsel didn't read that and didn't talk about it with its client, that's fine, but it was their burden to do that before the trial court, and they failed to do so. Your Honors, this is a clear jury waiver. It's conspicuous, and it was knowingly and voluntarily given. Accordingly, the Medical Center of Louisville requests that this court issue a writ of mandamus ordering respondent to vacate the order and enter an order granting the motion to quash. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Joyce. Mr. Dankus Ryder, we appreciate your arguments. I think they've been helpful to this court, and you will hear from us before too long. And with that, we will declare the court adjourned and ask the clerk to adjourn us, please.